I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Ag Expo at the Salinas Rodeo Ground.
Hi, I'm Walt Duflack, Senior Vice President of Innovation for Western Growers. We are at FIRA USA 2023, the Salinas version. It's our second one. We did Fresno last year. We're doing Salinas this year, and we're hoping to have a couple thousand folks all here focused on specialty crop automation.
So this is really the world's fair of new ag, new tech, right?
Exactly right. We call it Little Tulare. You know the World Ag Expo? Yeah. We're the specialty crop version of Tulare.
So talk to us a little bit about specialty crop versus mega crop.
Yeah. So if you think specialty crop, think fruits, nuts, and vegetables. Uh-huh. So we're not corn and soy. We're not livestock. We're not dairy. We are specifically the fruits, nuts, and veg of the world. Mm-hmm. And our members, Western Growers members, we've got over 2,000 members that grow all those fruits, nuts, and vegetables. We partnered with UCANR, the University of California Ag Natural Resources mm-hmm. team, and GOFAR, the French robotics team, to put on this event. Basically, when you think about specialty crops, a couple problem statements, right? Labor being the biggest one. When you look at how do you solve labor, how do you solve that problem of I've lost 7.6 million domestic workers?
What's interesting aside, you know, you always default, we need to get more jobs for workers.
Yep.
And yet there's a default worker shortage. They're not there.
In fact, there's a couple worker shortages. There's the people to work in the fields. That's getting more and more international because it has to because we just don't have them here.
Right.
And then there's the shortage of the skilled workers to manage these things because these things require a little more expertise than other things, right? So you need to be part engineer, mm-hmm. part computer scientist, part troubleshooter. So we're working hard with the community colleges of California to get the right kind of workforce out that can design these, sell them, build them, mm-hmm. maintain them, because there's going to be thousands of robots in fields the next 5 to 10 years. Wow. We better have the workforce ready for them.
Interesting. In workforce development, what you just alluded to is that being computer tech savvy is like English 1A in the old days.
Exactly. So that becomes, you hit it. And what's interesting about this is, unlike a lot of the emerging fields like AI, this one is hardware and software. You got to build stuff, and you got to build software to support that stuff.
Wow, so right? A wrench in one hand.
And a keyboard in the other. It's exactly right.
Well, literally. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. And then when it's break fix time, right, you're going to need both of those things at the same time.
Yeah.
And remember, you're going to be an hour from the nearest support guy. Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have guys in the fields who know what they're doing, or these things are going to be idle, and that just costs everybody.
I was at the Ford plant, and assembly line guys were using iPads to physically assemble a truck.
It's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
So we have the same thing. We have iPads that can control some of these robots,
mm-hmm.
and we have iPads that can troubleshoot some of these. And the next generation of stuff that's just starting to happen, and you'll see it on the FarmNG and some of the new machines, is they've got a console that can sort of phone home and let you walk through it remotely with software.
Wow. Basically, every robot that's around us is autonomous. There are no drivers, human drivers.
You know, yes and no. Most of them are autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them actually go the other way. They rely on the tractor to be autonomous. So this is a standalone machine where it's got mobility and functionality.
Right.
But a lot of the other machines have the three-point hitch where it's off the back of the tractor.
Driver driving the tractor and following it
is
the robot.
Exactly. So what we see a lot of is startups going that direction. So here's an example of an electric tractor, and they're doing a good job with that. But then you take your Verdant, Stout, FarmWise, and Carbon Robotics, your four kind of leaders in the weeding space.
Mm-hmm.
They've all gone to the back of the tractor format because it leverages the farmer's assets one more way. The equipment manufacturer is happy to support it that way because it's one more thing the green or the blue does, if it's green, if it's Deere or New Holland. Yeah, we definitely see a movement toward that where the autonomy is dependent on the tractor you have, not on the actual startup, because the startups don't want to have to build all that. That's more expensive, takes longer, right?
Yeah,
they can rely on the tractor and ISOBUS to connect it. They're happy.
That's really interesting.
They're happy.
As you remember, I was with your friend in Indiana last week.
Yep.
And he made a real fascinating point about the robots and doing this in the spray technology in the field and how much it saves in quantity of the application of the spray ingredients
alone.
Isn't it funny?
So it was good math a couple years ago. After the inflation, it's better math now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that classic, you know, it's a win to put less inputs on. It's a win to not have to buy as many inputs. And it's a win because you've automated it.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We're with Jose Marchetti.
Thank you, Thomas. EcoRobotics. My name is Jose Marchetti. Yes, we are bringing Swiss technology to FIRA this time. The machine that we manufacture in Switzerland is an ultra-high precision sprayer, unique in the world. We are able to reduce the usage of phytosanitary products up to 95%.
So it has like eyes that it sees where it needs to spray?
Yeah, you could say so, because the machine has six strong computers with a set of cameras, each of them. We are mapping the field and identifying what it is the crop and what it is the weed. And depending on what the farmer wants to do, we can spray either one or the other with such a precision that no one in the world has nowadays. It's 2.4 square inches.
So you're literally spraying the weed itself.
Exactly. We are spraying the target, which could be the weed or could be the crop if we want to do a fungicide or an insecticide or a liquid fertilizer, for example.
So the economic incentive for the grower, how do you couch that?
Well, I think it's really interesting that we have not only the savings, which is absolutely amazing because you can save up to 95%, but also something really important is that many of the phytosanitary products that we are using nowadays has some phytotoxicity on the crops. So what is interesting is not only you have up to 95% of sales, but the crops are able to yield more.
Okay.
Why? You avoid the phytotoxicity that many selective products has nowadays.
Through overspray.
Exactly. And you can add some other benefits, which is, for example, that we can reduce the need of manual labor significantly, which is really important as a cost for the farmers. Environmentally speaking, also, of course, it's fantastic. We are helping both the farmers and the consumers.
Twofold, you're saving on the cost of the product, right? Reducing the amount of pesticides, whatever you need to deploy.
Yes.
And then secondarily, labor costs, a major reduction.
All of that with healthier crops. So it's really a perfect mix. Everyone is being benefited. The farmer is getting the benefits. The consumer is eating healthier crops. And the environment is being taken care of as never before.
So your company is based in Switzerland?
Yes, correct. We are based in Switzerland. The company was founded in 2014. We started selling our machines 2 years ago in Europe. We are covering 15 countries, and now we are opening the business in the whole Americas.
When you started selling in Europe, who were the first to respond? What growers in what country?
We have a lot of success with the onion and lettuce growers. All high-value crops, the ones really seeing the return on the investment.
Really the row crop where it's surgically applicable.
Yes, I mean, we have machines sold now in Wisconsin, and it's for corn, but it's an organic farm. So you could say that all high-value crops are seeing a return on the investment that it is worth to buy this new technology.
So where do you live?
Originally from Argentina. I lived for almost 10 years here in the US. 2 years ago, I moved to Switzerland to be at the headquarters of EcoRobotics.
But you are on the road. Here you are in Salinas, California.
Yeah. All the time, and I love it because, you know, I love America, and it's so nice to spend my time between Switzerland and the US.
Jose, thanks for sharing.
It was a pleasure, Thomas. Really. Thank you.
And it's fascinating to me that the little robot eye can pinpoint a weed and squirt just that weed.
It's totally right. Here's what's interesting. Carbon Robotics does the laser weeding, and the laser might be the most interesting because the data's starting to arrive now. They were almost afraid to say we can kill 100,000 weeds an hour, but when you look at the early stage pre-emergent stuff, it's shocking how many weeds there are that just even the human crews can identify that the laser can realize, oh, that's going to be a weed?
Mm-hmm.
Like when it's this big,
little
I'll just get it right now.
And they can. They can dial
they can.
In.
That's where the laser is great. It's probably the most precise way. So there's laser, there's mechanical, and there's spray.
Mm-hmm.
All three have places in the market, but the lasers definitely have a precision edge in a lot of examples.
That's really interesting. And it all really gets back down to economics,
always.
To survival.
Yeah. No, the startups realize we can do a laser weeder. We can do a fancy sprayer. But at the end of the day, we're going to be competing with the labor that that grower buys to be in the right place economically. Because think about it. We've seen folks like Abundant Robotics who built the Apple Harvest robot. It could harvest apples. couldn't do it at 2 cents an apple and couldn't do it in a way that made them believe that 2 cents was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So again, did the job, but has to do it at grower economics.
How about this? I know I spent time in the fields here talking to organic strawberry growers.
Yep.
Okay, in Salinas Valley.
Yep.
But one of the unintended byproducts of neighbors is downwind drift.
Yes,
so it,
100%.
So it follows that doing the robotic application could mitigate downwind drift or no?
So by spraying less,
yeah,
you can mitigate some of that.
And but targeting,
can,
yeah.
Exactly.
You so can, you're you closer to the ground.
That's
you're
right.
Not doing it from a great distance.
That's exactly. Think about it. If you were doing aircraft spray or drone spray, you're above. If you're doing robots down the aisles, you're alongside. By definition, that should be better.
My name is Brianna Layfield. I'm the president and founder of Agbee. We are at FIRA 2023 in Salinas. Very excited to be here. This is the first year they've allowed drones to be present. So we have a drone pavilion here with Monterey Dart. We were the first drone spray service provider in California. We got our exemption to spray with drones in 2019. My pilot, Nate Nowles, is the first journeyman UAS pilot in the state. And so we provide aerial application for all crop types all over the state. We go up and down.
How did you personally come up with the idea and create the business?
You know, it's kind of funny how that worked. I went to a drone conference in Las Vegas in 2018, met the first person who was approved to spray with drones there out of Texas, and I saw how much they were utilizing spray drones in Asia. They had started using them in Australia and other parts of the world. So I knew that eventually they'd be coming to California and the United States. So I started it really before anyone was even doing it here. It's been an uphill battle and a lot of education.
What's the uphill battle? Why wouldn't it be a no-brainer?
You would think it would be a no-brainer, but unless you can compete with crop dusters or ground rigs, you know, they really don't want to utilize you. There's been some early adopters. Mark Mason with Huntington Farms has been huge for us. He's been an early adopter. Josh Ruiz has been an early adopter. Dorigo Brothers has given us some shots to do some applications for them as well. So that's been amazing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Andy boy, my hero.
Yeah, exactly. And so, we actually met with Wilbur Ellis yesterday, so it's definitely taking off. And everything that we've worked towards is really starting to explode this year. So we will be opening a Salinas branch probably by the end of the year. We're based in Southern California, but we'll be all over the state fairly soon.
And how about the economics of it? How do you sell it? So, is it an economic advantage?
Yeah, so initially there really wasn't one. And because we had a much smaller drone, we could only get to about 15 acres a day with the minimums you have to use in California. Now with this guy, because he's 50 liters, at peak capacity at 5 gallons per acre, we can get 30 acres an hour, which is just a game changer for us. So now we can charge per acre rather than hourly, and right. We are more competitive with crop dusters.
So there are certain crops that have to be aerial sprayed, right?
Sure.
You can't do it ground.
Right. And the great thing about drones is they definitely have a niche. You know, we're not going to be able to hit thousands of acres in a day. But for the smaller plots that are encroached by urban areas or, you know, they're higher growth so they can't use tractors or too wet or whatever the scenario, drones are perfect for that fit.
And it follows, especially like Asia, you have some terrain that you couldn't even drive a tractor on.
No, you can't. And really, we do a lot of grapes, both in Southern California and Northern California. So there's a lot of really steep grades. And the only way they can treat those is typically by hand with difficulties. So this completely helps them out as well.
We got some pretty steep hills in Santa Lucia Highlands, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, definitely. And we just did two demos earlier last week on some Santa Cruz Mountain vineyards. Mm-hmm. And you haven't seen steep till you've been up there dealing with their 45-degree grades. It's just crazy.
To learn more about your world,
you can go to agbee.com, agbee.com. And you can also contact me, Brianna, at agbee.com. And I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Ag Expo at the Salinas Rodeo Ground. Let's go take a look over here. Talk to us about what these robots are in front of us.
So this is the NIO machine. And NIO has four robots, actually, four different form factors, four different sizes. They will do a couple different things. They will do spray weeding. They will do cultivating. They have a little scout robot called, and I'll get the names wrong. I think it's Ted is the large one.
They go out ahead.
So the scout robot does exactly what you think. Just goes out and scouts the ground for you so you can know what to do with it later. Mm-hmm. And I think that scouting robot will be hugely useful because if it's making passes down the road mm-hmm. during a grow cycle, you can see it at 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And Oreo just does that for you, right? So I think scouting robots, and think about it, we'll see if we can find them, but FarmNG and Burrow are here. Both FarmNG and Burrow are building $15,000 to $25,000 platforms that can do that scouting type of activity and other key stuff. So when you start getting down to that price point, you can buy a fleet of these guys and actually put them out in the field just to capture data.
What's a John Deere tractor cost today?
A little more than that. More than that. Depends on how much horse you want. For math's sake, and you know this, it's about $1,000 per horse. So if you're getting a 50-horse machine, you're at least $50,000.
Yeah.
More than that, I would say closer to $70,000 with inflation, it seems like. And then if you're at 100 horse, you're probably 100 to 120. Mm-hmm. These little machines, they're not that kind of horse. They don't need to be, but they're just scouting machines. They're great at that price point.
This is the Robotics Plus.
This is a sprayer that comes over from New Zealand. Steve Saunders is the founder. He's done a fantastic job building the company, brought the sprayer here. This is a machine that plays in the same space as Gus. They both spray. They both do a lot of work in orchards. They're both entering the California market and the Washington State market in the next little bit. Very competitive marketplace right now. These sprayers, they can do the job at grower economics to the conversation, and excited to see what Steve and Gus can do in the next couple of years.
And talk to us about its surgical application versus back in the day.
Right. So basically, you get a more precise spray and you get just the amount you need because you're combining vision with some fancy AI with some new technology sprayers. So this thing can go down the aisle and it knows exactly where to put it, shuts it off when it doesn't need to, and really gets that precise, that precision application we've all been talking about for a long time that, yes, sometimes the human crews can do, but they're harder to find and more expensive. This is a great alternative.
Yeah, my name's Nathan Search, and I'm the Chief Commercial Officer for Robotics Plus.
Where is Robotics Plus based?
We're based out of New Zealand, so we're based in Tauranga, which is the Bay of Plenty, which is one of New Zealand's major horticulture and agriculture centres.
And how long have you been operating down there?
Robotics Plus has been around for about 12 years now, but really in the last 5 years or so, we've really started to grow quite quickly.
Talk to us about the application and how it's a self-selling technology.
Yeah, so agriculture is like a lot of industries, you know, they're all having the same labour issues, not only around just the cost, but just can you actually get the people that you need. So we've developed a really intelligent robotics platform that will automate a range of tasks in vineyards and orchards. We're primarily focusing on spraying at the moment, but eventually you'll be able to use these machines for anything that you might use a human and a tractor for. So whether that's trimming or cutting, whatever you might be doing, we'll be taking labour out of that equation and both improving the safety of people but also the quality of the jobs that they're doing.
So spray technology off the robot?
Yeah, so the robot will pilot itself down an orchard or a vineyard row. It's covered in sensors, so it's very intelligent. It can see where it needs to apply the spray. It can adjust based on its speed and then turn the spray fans off as required. And that's just going to allow you to get just far better coverage than perhaps a person who might forget to turn fans on and off and all the things that fallible humans like us always do.
Up to date, I think I remember you saying that viticulture, grape industry, that's been your primary market, but that's changing fast.
Yeah, so primarily viticulture and apples. The growing structures lend themselves quite well to automation, so we like that. And they have very large contiguous plantings that our machine's quite well suited for here in California and in Washington State as well.
How did a grower here in Salinas Valley find out about you?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things is we're here at FERA over the next 3 days with a whole collection of people from industry, but really just if you want to look online, if you go to roboticsplus.co.nz or if you go onto LinkedIn and search for Robotics Plus or myself, Nathan Sowich, you'll be able to find out all about us and everything we're doing.
Nathan, thanks for sharing.
No, pleasure. Thanks very much.
Just off the cuff, what is this retail for roughly?
I want to say the price for these machines is roughly in the same ballpark. I want to say it's between $200 and $300. Mm-hmm. And the difference is, in the case of Gus, I know their product line a little bit better. They've got the Gus, they've got Mini Gus, and they've got Herbicide Gus. Gus is a 33-foot machine. Mini Gus is a 22-foot machine. The Robotics Plus machine is kind of in the middle of that. I think it's in the middle of price point as well. So most of them are in that $200,000 to $300,000 range. And again, they're doing one thing really well, but that's what they do.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then over here we have the FarmNG machine. This is a machine out of Watsonville. It's a really great story. It's a California company born and raised, Silicon Valley guys who wanted to take on ag. Ironically, Ethan, the founder, started farming himself and realized, this is hard. I gotta figure out some automation solutions. He built this as a solution for himself, and then figured out,
this looks like a prototype.
It does, right? Other farmers will benefit from this. So you can see he's got a couple different accessories hanging off the back of it, right? So a propane tank coming off of it. What is this contraption over here? It looks like a sprayer over here. Something going on, or maybe this ties into the propane, I guess. Maybe this is a burn unit. After you spray ditches, you can burn them to get the dead out of there.
So this has a physical person operating it, right?
So it can, or it can go autonomous. So I've seen them both ways.
What does this robot do?
Let's go take a look. This looks like something that would put something onto the crop. I just don't know what. The business model is maybe the most interesting part of FarmNG. They're building the mobility autonomous platform.
So application can be whatever.
Whatever, and in fact, application will be whatever the third parties want to build on top of it. So imagine a weeding accessory goes on top, a spray accessory like we're seeing here, an input accessory maybe. And so they have basically said, look, if you're a developer, we'll give you an autonomous mobility platform for about $20,000. You build on top of it. You sell to the customer. We just want our $20,000. You do whatever you can to get it into market.
And these are in Watsonville.
These are in Watsonville. Wow. They've got a team of 40. They've raised some capital now for some venture capitalists. I want to say $11 million, maybe a little bit more. And what's super interesting is they don't want to go directly to the grower. They want someone else to work with them to go directly to the grower. Mm-hmm. I think that is an interesting model. Burrow goes the other way. Burrow sells directly with the accessories. So it's just a different partner go-to-market model. There's room for both, and we're excited about both. I think this will be the way we get to the thousands of robots. These guys in that $20,000 price point are going to get there before some of the bigger guys at $300,000 make sense, right? Yep. But they'll all be collecting massive amounts of data that we can do a lot of cool stuff with. We had a farm robotics challenge that FarmNG sponsored and University of California put on, and it was fantastic because you had university teams from all over, including the Midwest. So Purdue brought a couple teams with them. Well, guess what? They were using it in the Midwest. So if these aren't Midwest, there's definitely stuff going on in the Midwest that can leverage it. Same reason, right? Why not take a nice base platform? Because for you to build a mobility autonomous platform for $20,000, no chance. We looked at building one for Western growers because we were going to do an image library, and that requires capturing thousands of images, right? And we looked at it, I sized it, I said, God, that's going to take me like $75,000 in 6 months. And then Ethan shows up and says, hey, we can do that for about 25, maybe 40 with some fancy images.
That turned out
to be the much better answer.
That's really cool. Over here, there's a robot driving around. What's this one here?
Let's go take a look. The Nio one? Yeah, this one's motionless for now. See, look at the accessories on this one. This has multiple accessories off the middle of it, and this can go in and it can disc up, turn the soil for you, do some other stuff on the cultivation side. So basically, this is a classic example where Nio right now is doing an as-a-service play. So they bring this piece of hardware out with whatever configuration they need to do, whatever task you want it to do, and then they'll do the task and charge you basically by the acre or by the job. And so it's a nice way to do it as a service because you're not having to spend $300,000 for a machine. You can call them and say, hey, I need this cultivation done. Come to these 20 acres at X per acre and you're good. So we are seeing a difference in models farm-wise.
But this is pretty fundamental to disking, harrowing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, you could call them out and say, hey, come out and disc these 20 acres, and you're paying by the acre, not having to buy the whole machine. So for the small farmers, we actually think the as-a-service and the smaller platforms like Burrow and FarmNG, we think they're the option for small farmers.
And what's the economic advantage of this versus driving the tractor and towing your disc?
Well, I think the hope is that if you're doing it this way, you either get better disking out of this equipment or you get more efficient disking out of this equipment. There's got to be some math in it on one of two things. I'm either doing it better or I'm doing it faster, one or the other.
And how do you quantify that?
I would think the grower would look at it and say, all right, I've got an old disc right now that's manual, right? That's not super smart, but it'll do the job. Yeah. And then it comes down to use case then, right? If I just need to turn the soil, turn all of it, I'd use a standard disc, right? Mm-hmm. If I need to turn it with some intelligence or turn parts of it, I may look at this type of option, right? So it's all going to come down to what's the use case and what's the labor source for the farmer. And that's going to vary by farming operation, right? That's the other reality is this works better for some growers than other growers, depending on how often you turn. Like if you're a no-till guy, you're probably not looking at this, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're a till guy or a semi or a slight, you know, low-till guy, as we call them, you'd probably take a look.
That's kind of the future, isn't it? Low-till, it's really already shifted there.
Well, I think it has. And I think if you talk to the regenerative guys, it's a little unrealistic to expect teams to do two or three crop rotations and not turn it over at least once, right? Now, there are guys on the front end of this conversation. So guys like Braga Fresh down in Soledad, farms all over really, Taylor Farms, I would say Rodney Braga's team, Bruce Taylor's team, those companies are doing a really good job on getting the regenerative principles applied. But let me be clear about regenerative. It is not free and it is not fast. And so the way the companies are making money off that investment right now is they're saying, okay, I've got a bunch of buyers that now want to buy my product because I am regenerative. So basically, what those guys are saying is, I can go regenerative first, I can be among the leaders, and the retail buyers want to buy that product from me, they'll pay a premium.
Because they appreciate it.
So Braga just signed a big deal that a lot of people miss, but it's important. They signed a deal with Whole Foods where Whole Foods committed to buying the regenerative broccoli that they've been growing at a premium price. That allows you to scale it out and build a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way this should happen, is let the buyers and the growers figure it out.
So they build that into their marketing and promotion.
Exactly right. Build it into the model on both sides. Yeah. Exactly right. We'd much rather see that than seeing government mandates and forcing guys to do stuff. It'll get there with time, but you got to have that market incentive of, I can get new customers on my buyer side.
But in the greater good equation, it's all about the environment and minimal.
That's right. Yeah. So then it comes down to a question of how. Right? Are we better off letting these guys figure it out that can do all these multi-billion dollar companies on all sides? Mm-hmm. Or do we want to try and put the hammer down a little bit? We would say the market's sorting itself out.
Our Air Systems West out of San Martin. We do produce heavy lift drones. And also our parent company makes a safety device for a parachute, ballistic parachute system for a drone as well. And our drones are so-called modular drones. So we do produce heavy lift drone, but the customer can choose to put whatever the payload that they want to put on.
So you build the drones in San Martin?
Yes, we do. So we are so-called NDAA compliant drones. So
NDAA is?
Basically, it's all the products are, all the components are made within like U.S. territory or U.S. friendly countries. So we can sell it to the government, and a lot of our customers used our drones for like research, and we are going into more of ag technology as well.
So you're not limited to ag by
any means? We can basically sell it for any customer who wants to use it for anything. So
what are some of the applications so far specifically?
Research. They can put a bunch of sensors and cameras, and we are looking into putting a dispenser and spreader for ag technology, fire suppression system as well. And we get, the heaviest one can build, lift up to about 70 pounds, a little over 70 pounds. We have the smallest one, it's called ILM. It only lifts up about 12 pounds for a smaller application. And we have four different sizes of drones. So we try to cover something from very small size to the larger size as well.
To learn more about your company.
We are Aerosystems West. So we do produce drones in San Martin. We are owned by a Japanese company, Nippon Kayaku. They specialize in many different technologies, but one of the technologies that they specialize is the airbag and seatbelt pretensioner ignition system. So we use the same system for igniting our parachute system. And we do produce automatic ignition system, triggering system, as well as manual one as well. So automatic one detects, it has its own sensor and it has its own capacitor and data recording system. So it detects the free fall, you know, if drones in free falling, then it detects by itself, deploys parachutes, and it protects, you know, people underneath and payloads and the drone itself.
That's really cool. Takisha Yoshida, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's move on and look at some other.
Yeah, we can roll for a little. So this one is Telefarmer by Agtonomy, and this is really some cutting-edge stuff. This is both an app and a fancy tractor, mm-hmm. and some things you can do with it. And it's fully electric. It's not a combustion engine, which, again, we would say the market's going to sort that out. Mm-hmm. We're probably not ready to electrify everything just yet. The grid, the grid's not ready, but it's coming. Yeah. So Agtonomy is one of the leaders in getting a tractor with some accessories out the back. And, again, it's a tractor that can do many things.
Jake Randa with Agtonomy, and this is an autonomous tractor.
Where are you based?
I'm based in Monterey County, but our head offices are based in South San Francisco, and we have operations in Sonoma County and Napa.
So talk to us about what we're looking at.
So it's a purpose-built autonomous tractor, specifically for permanent crops like caneberries, vineyards, and orchards is what we're targeting. And it's fully electric.
So there's a seat and a wheel.
Yep.
But yet there's no driver?
The idea behind that is there's some tasks where you're going to want a driver, mm-hmm. and they're super specialized, and then the autonomous aspects are going to just allow the driver to focus on the more labor-intensive and focus-intensive tasks that mm-hmm. they may be needing to do.
So they're not navigating as much as
not
surveilling?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
With this specific one, we've partnered with Thiessen, which is a Canadian manufacturer. It's an autonomous toolbar. It works in conjunction with the tractor to keep things aligned for under the vine cultivation.
And so that's a weeder right out there?
Yeah, so this is, it's called a Radius M. Mm-hmm. It's from Clemens Implements, and it's a mechanical weeder for under the vine cultivation. So this toolbar that we built is modular to take any type of attachment. So we could take a Thiessen finger weeder, which has a different use case, and we use this same toolbar to put stuff like a weed seeker, which is a green-on-brown spot sprayer if someone's using herbicide, or a KCI electric motor that we have, or mower deck that's 24 inches, that'll bounce around, and you can mow under the vine. The whole goal of what we're trying to do is take the really labor-intensive tasks that are not necessarily high-skill tasks and allow you to re-pivot your operators into the higher skill tasks that you want more focus on.
To learn more about your world, your go-to website?
It's agtonomy.com.
Too easy.
Yep.
All right. Jake, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Walt Duflack, Senior Vice President of Innovation for Western Growers.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Salinas Rodeo Grounds. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.